Now, we're talking to people about miracles and the possibility or not of them. I just wondered whether, do you think it's possible that miracles can occur?
I do, yes.
You do? I'm a little bit more sceptical, I suppose.
I wouldn't say that any have happened to me yet.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure there's things that we don't know about that go on out there that can't be explained by science or logic.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
Tell me why.
I suppose I'm a very rational person.
Yeah, I think everyday life is just a miracle. It's a miracle that you wake up every day, or, you know, that you're just alive. I guess little things you take for granted could kind of be looked at a larger scale of being a miracle.
Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Today we're talking about miracles in an age of science. Can we believe in the supernatural claims of miracles, either those from today or those back in the time of Jesus? A Harold Nielsen poll a couple of years ago found that 63% of Australians believed in miracles, which more or less lined up with the 64% who said at that time that they believed in God. Today we're going to hear some pretty incredible modern miracle stories and also think about whether there are any good reasons to trust the accounts of Jesus' miracles. But first, how can anyone be sure that miracles are possible? Or on the other hand, how could we be sure that they're not?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, I think. Some people will think that in an age of jet planes and the internet and open heart surgery and, you know, satellite navigation and that type of thing, that you're not going to be impressed with stories like the parting of the Red Sea or Jesus turning water into wine, perhaps people who are blind being made to see or couldn't walk and now they can. If you're a true child of modernity, you'll certainly struggle to accept anything like an actual resurrection from the dead.
Yes, certainly we're trained to be sceptical about this kind of thing. Doubt is really our natural response. But is it the case that you have to either believe in the hard facts of modern science or that you can be open to the possibility of miracles? Do you think those things have to be mutually incompatible?
Well, no. To me, this whole question of miracles in an age of science, in a technological age or whatever, boils down to what I think is just a simple but profound clash of worldviews. So if you're open to the possibility that there's a God, then you won't really find miracles to be overly problematic. If you believe in God, you think that the universe is the first miracle. It's the thing created by God. It's real, it's natural, can be described scientifically to some degree. And specifically, the Christian view of God is that he is completely other than the universe. He's outside the universe, but he sustains it, he holds it up, he conserves it. So it's possible, according to this type of belief, to think that God might do things differently sometimes, to sometimes deviate from the usual way he treats stuff.
Things like maybe Jesus walking on water or turning water into wine or raising people from the dead, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you think of God and the world in the way that I described, it's not at all difficult to believe in the possibility of miracles, both the biblical miracles and the present day miracles. If, however, you don't believe in that kind of personal God, then miracles are obviously going to be a bit of a stretch for you.
Of course, when we're thinking about miracles, the question of how we actually define a miracle matters. How unlikely or just plain impossible, according to our own limited understanding of the world, does something have to be before we're willing to call it a miracle?
Right, yeah. So the Swans winning the grand final might not qualify for that. But yes, essentially the popular Western understanding of miracle, which follows on from the philosopher David Hume, has been that a miracle is an event that violates the laws of nature. Lots of people think of a miracle in those terms. But it's different to how the Bible understands this. The Bible defines a miracle more in this way. It's not a violation of a natural law, but rather an amazing work of power that is a signpost to God. The Gospels use those words, power and sign, when they're talking about these things. And according to this way of thinking, miracles are not acts that are impossible in our reality, but rather they're acts within our reality that only God has the power to do. That's true if the physical universe is not a closed system, if we can be open to the supernatural, to things that we can't see or measure or touch.
Have you ever been in a situation where you'd hoped for a miracle?
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't always come off that.
Yes, definitely. It took me 7 attempts to pass my driving test.
Everybody has that moment in their life that they hope for a miracle, so yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I think so. Even being a skeptic, you know, I think it comes to play that you hope that something extraordinary may happen.
Craig Keener is a New Testament scholar from Asbury Seminary in the US. He's written a bunch of commentaries on the Bible, and he also wrote a massive academic book called Miracles, The Credibility of the New Testament Accounts. He's researched a whole heap of modern-day miracle stories. He's gone out and sought testimony of people who claim to have witnessed or themselves experienced a miracle.
I started checking into circles that I knew of today, and I reported on some of these experiences, again, not trying to explain them, but just noting them, and noting that there are many reports of this from Africa, Asia, and Latin America, as well as some from the West. And one of the scholars in the back of the room, who was from Nigeria, stood up, and he himself gave the eyewitness account of his son, who was born dead, pronounced dead by the midwife. 20 minutes later, after prayer, the son returned to life, and this was his understanding of what happened. With no brain damage, the son has recently finished his master's degree. But one of the most striking stories that I found was in my own family, something that my wife had told me about, but my wife wasn't the eyewitness, she was too young. I interviewed my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law told me about my wife's sister, Therese. When she was 2 years old, she cried out that she was bitten by a snake, and my mother-in-law ran to her and found her not breathing. And there was no medical help available in the village. So she strapped the child to her back and ran to a nearby village where a friend of the family, who was known for prayer, was involved in ministry. She ran to the village, Coco Moise prayed for Therese, and immediately she started breathing, and the next day she was fine. I asked my mother-in-law how long she wasn't breathing, and she said, about 3 hours. It took about 3 hours to get from where she was to the other village. Now, we can explain those things however we want to, but we can't deny that eyewitnesses have experienced these things, and there's no reason to deny that eyewitnesses could have experienced these things in the time of Jesus either.
But it wasn't just stories from Africa and from other parts of the developing world that Keener came across in his research. He also told us about some pretty amazing things he heard from people in a Western context.
While most of these stories seem to occur in places where there's not as much medical help available, I think we have medical help, we should make use of it. But I do have some reports from the West as well. For instance, one doctor, a cardiologist in Florida, he was called in to certify somebody was dead. They had been trying to resuscitate the man. He died of cardiac arrest. And after about 40 minutes, they gave up. There was nothing more that they could do. He was leaving, and as he got to the exit to go back to his rounds in the rest of the hospital, he felt like God wanted him to go back. And he went back, he laid hands on him and said, God, if you want this man to have another chance to come to know you — this obviously does not normally happen — but he said, if you want this man to have another chance to know you, please raise him from the dead. The nurse, of course, was looking at him like he was crazy. But he turned to one of his colleagues who had also come into the room with him and said, shock him with the paddle one more time. Shocked him with the paddle. Immediately he had a normal heartbeat. And far from having irreparable brain damage, and you know, his extremities had already started changing color from lack of oxygen. The cardiologist went in and talked with him a couple days later in the hospital. The man was talking with him perfectly intelligently, and he had restored use of his limbs. Now, again, however we explain those things, we can't deny that credible eyewitnesses claim these things, something that Hume said should not have happened.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith, and we're discussing the topic of miracles, whether they're possible, and also claims of particular miracles, both in the past and around the world today. Obviously, these kinds of events feature heavily in the Jesus story. Some people are very uncomfortable with that. Famously, Thomas Jefferson cut out all the supernatural bits from his New Testament with a razor so that he could read the life of Jesus minus any of those pesky miracle stories. Simon, what do you think we miss out on? What's lost when we try to discount in some way that side of the Jesus story?
Yeah, well, I think you lose a lot. Because these miracles are very important in establishing who Jesus is and, you know, whether it matches up with his claims. But historians agree that Jesus had gained a reputation as a healer, as an exorcist, as a worker of miracles or, you know, amazing deeds. And there's plenty of evidence that people believed that about him. That's how people approached Jesus. And you'd have to think that some of these people must have gotten better, or they wouldn't have kept approaching him in this way. But not just because he could do these things is the purpose of these miracles, that they point to an identity that Jesus was claiming to be the Son of God. And so they're there as well to encourage people to have faith in him, that he is who he says he is.
So that's not just for the people at the time who were approaching him in this way. How do readers today, going through the gospel stories, why are the miracle stories important to them as well? Why can't we just casually cut them out like Thomas Jefferson did?
Yeah, well, as I said, I think they tell us something about who this person claims to be. But for the believer then, so the person who comes to trust in this story, to trust in this person, the miracles mean that you can approach God as a God who can and does act in history. That's a very important part of this. And he's a God who cares. He's not aloof from the world and distant from it. The miracle stories also teach us that, well, the word translated save in the Bible can mean physical restoration, but it can also mean spiritual restoration. So in a sense, you get this feeling that the one who can restore people physically can also bind up broken-hearted people and transform them and make them new. Very often, that is the miracle that we observe.
Well, the most important miracle of them all is Jesus' resurrection from the dead. This is the biggie for Christian belief. Here's Craig Keener again.
Some people want to bracket out the question of the supernatural from historiography. And if you define historiography in that way, then, of course, that's just a matter of definition. You can do that. But even if you bracket out the question of the cause, whether God did this or not, we're still left with the data. The data include the empty tomb, in an early biography of Jesus. And even earlier than that, we have a massive amount of evidence for people who claim to have seen Jesus alive from the dead. And these were people who had everything to lose by claiming that Jesus was still alive from the dead, and that this person who had been executed by the authorities was now Lord of creation. That, again, is something that could get you in big trouble.
And one final question. What does that resurrection mean today? What difference can it make to life now?
If Jesus rose from the dead and was transformed to another order of existence, that means that he is not just alive somewhere, but that it validates his claim that he is Lord. If we acknowledge that Jesus truly rose from the dead, it's not just an act of past history. It means that Jesus is still alive. And Jesus still comes to us with his demands on our lives, and he still comes to us with his promise of a new life for us, and the hope that this promise of the resurrection applies not just to Jesus, but is also a hope that we can look forward to of new life and a new world. And if we truly believe in that hope for the future, we can live as people of that future in the midst of the present.
So then when it comes to the resurrection in particular, there's a decent amount of evidence and logic that have to be dealt with if people want to say that it didn't happen.
Yes, there is. There's lots. But for me, the key is whether or not subsequent events could have been what they are if the resurrection hadn't occurred. In my mind, you have to posit an X big enough to explain the why of the church. And the evidence here is mainly this transformation of a group of unqualified, marginalized, kind of weak-willed followers of Jesus into a force of social regeneration that within a few generations was right throughout the Roman Empire, and within a few hundred years had basically taken it over. Tom Wright, who's the biblical historian and scholar, says that a fair and thorough historian must say these things, that there was a tomb where Jesus was laid, there was then an empty tomb, and there were claims of appearances to his friends. Tom Wright would join many others in saying that the resurrection is therefore a sufficient and necessary explanation for what went on.
We've been talking about miracles, why we shouldn't be too quick to dismiss the possibility that miracles can happen, that they have happened in the past, and that plenty of people believe they still happen today. It's fascinating stuff. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on Life and Faith.